Today's excerpts are taken from an EMI Classics recording featuring Birgit Nielsen as Minnie, Andrea Mongelli as Jack Rance, and Huao Jibin as Dick Johnson, a.k.a. the highwayman Ramirez. Lovro von Matacic conducts the chorus and orchestra of La Scala. Very special thanks to EMI Classics for providing these excerpts, and to Nicholas Ivor Martin for his assistance in preparing this commentary. The opera opens inside the Polka, a miner's bar in the Sierra Nevada. We hear rather than see the miners as they shout at one another on their way down from the mine. The stage is apparently not big enough to hold the vastness of the American West. But almost at once we are hit by Fanciulla's contradictions. The miners sing the words "do-da, do-da, do-da-day" on their way to the polka. Even today we know those words, "camp down races 5 miles long, oh, do-da-day." They come from Stephen Foster's 1850 song, "Camp Down Races." Foster is, so far as I know, the only American to have composed the state anthem of two different states. And in addition to Camp Down Races, his output included "Oh, Susanna," "Swanee River," "Hard Times Come Again No More," and "My Old Kentucky Home." If the California Gold Rush of 1849 had a theme song, it was "Oh, Susanna," published the year before. Miners brought their banjos and Foster's music with them as they rushed to the gold fields of California. But they didn't bring "Camp Down Races." It wasn't written until 1850. That Puccini didn't know this is understandable. David Belasco apparently didn't know it either, and as I've said, he grew up in California. Belasco's play opens with the song, and the play is filled with American musical references and instruments. What is harder to understand is how Puccini thought he could use the words but not the music, given that every member of his New York audience would recognize them instantly. The polka bar is owned by Minnie, the girl of the title, but is being tended by Nick, who caters to the miners. He tells every miner who asks that Minnie likes him best. She is the only girl in the camp, so not surprisingly, all the miners are in love with her. While a group of them starts a card game, Larkins sulks in the background. Larkins is sick and tired of the life and wants to go home to his mother in Cornwall. Jake Wallace, the camp minstrel, sings a nostalgic song for the miners. Jake wonders if his family is crying over their long separation. Clearly he misses them. At the opera's premiere, Jake was played by Andres de Sagarola, a Spanish bass who performed many small roles for the Metropolitan over a period of 2 decades. It may come as a surprise that he performed the role in blackface. Minstrel shows in America were already in decline by the turn of the 20th century, but they still existed. The minstrel show started as a pre-Civil War era entertainment in which white performers darkened their face with burnt cork to portray slaves and American blacks generally as lazy and superstitious. They sang or performed skits, and as the form grew more popular, African Americans themselves started performing in minstrel shows. Stephen Foster's songs grow in part from this minstrel tradition, although he explicitly eschewed the form's more racist elements. By Fanciulla's premiere in 1910, the deeply offensive nature of many of these sketches had begun to sink in. This was also the last year that New York boasted a professional minstrel theatre, but there is no doubt this is what Belasco meant by minstrel. In a stage direction in the play, Belasco writes that Jake Wallace enters, carrying a banjo, his face half blackened. He wears a long minstrel's duster over his heavy coat, flapping shoes, and a stovepipe hat. He is the typical camp minstrel. Velasco's inclusion of the minstrel is a good example of the attention to realism that made him a famous theatre producer. Offensive as we find the idea of blackface performers today, a mining camp during the gold rush undoubtedly would have had such a minstrel. More surprising than the blackface is how Puccini once again misses an opportunity to impart some authentic local flavour. Velasco's minstrel is singing Foster's Old Dog Tray, and he is accompanying himself on that most American of instruments, the banjo. The play also mentions a concertina, but neither instrument appears in Puccini's score. And before anyone says that a banjo has no place in opera, I would point to I Got Plenty of Nothing from George Gershwin's Porgy and Bess. Jake Wallace's song is based on an American tune, but from a source you might not expect. Puccini used a Native American tune published in 1909 by ethnomusicologist Carlos Troyer. The composer had originally meant to use Troyer's research for the two Native American characters in the opera, but in the end he changed his mind. At this point, you may well be asking, what was Puccini thinking? The answer requires a brief foray into the composer's personal life. Tosca, Bohème and Butterfly had all been written by the librettist team of Luigi Illica and Giuseppe Giacosa. But in 1906, Giacosa died. The composer didn't think Illica was up to the task of writing a complete libretto himself and instead turned to an Italian-American playwright, Carlo Zangarini. Zangarini spoke English. His mother was from Colorado, meaning that he could adapt the Belasco play without having to go through a translator. But Zangarini and Puccini were both busy men. Puccini was dashing around the world presenting his other operas, while Zangarini was pursuing his own career. When Zangarini was unable to complete the libretto quickly enough for Puccini, the composer hired an Italian from Livorno, Guelfo Civinini, as co-librettist. Zangarini went off in a huff, with the result that the third act, largely written by Civinini, follows the Belasco play much less faithfully than acts 1 and 2. Puccini may well not have known the American references in his own libretto. And the composer was having other problems closer to home. He had almost been killed in a car crash in 1903. Giacosa's death in 1906 was a personal blow to the composer, and in 1909, Puccini's wife Elvira accused their maid, Doria Manfredi, of having an affair with Puccini. The accusations were untrue. A medical examination showed Doria to be a virgin, but the maid killed herself. Doria's family sued the Puccinis and won. Certainly Puccini was in a melancholy mood. Jake's song, which is taken up by the homesick miners, is melancholy in the extreme. These remarkable ensembles make up the backbone of Fanciulla, which has far shorter and far fewer arias than the composer's previous works. You may have heard the miners asking if Il mio cane mi ravviserà, will my old dog recognize me? In English translations of the libretto, this is often translated as My Dog Tray, copying the Stephen Foster song, even though the dog's name does not appear in the Italian. Foster's song is about the dog who remains as the singer's only friend after all his human friends have died. It's interrupted by Jim Larkin's bursting into tears. He misses his family, and the other miners contribute money to send him home. No sooner has Larkin's gone than the card game starts up again. It turns out Sid is cheating. The boys want to hang him, but Sheriff Jack Rance convinces them to pin the two of spades on Sid's coat. It will be a reminder of his crime, and if Sid ever takes it off, then they can hang him. At various points in the scene, the stage directions tell us that the Native American Billy Jackrabbit has been stealing things from the tavern. Jack Wallace is not the only racial stereotype in the piece. Native Americans and Mexicans are treated harshly as well, although this should be laid at Belasco's feet more than Puccini's. One Mexican in particular is of interest to Mr. Ashby, the agent of the Wells Fargo agency. Ashby complains to Rance that he has spent 3 months trying to capture the Mexican bandit Ramirez, but so far without success. When Ashby takes his leave, Sonora and Rance get into an argument over Minnie. They are both in love with her. Sonora draws a pistol, and the fight that ensues is interrupted by the dramatic arrival of Minnie herself.
Mrs. Rance, frappato, no, attenzione.
There are few better entrances in opera. Their anger completely forgotten, the miners pay their respects to their beloved Minnie. She returns the favour with a Bible lesson, a very Puccinian variant on Belasco. Almost all of Puccini's heroines are deeply religious, and the cowgirl Minnie is no Manon. She reads to them from the Psalms of David, and follows it up by telling Billy Jackrabbit that he must marry his Wokely now that they have a baby together. Belasco's girl is equally pure, but less prudish. She's teaching the boys to read, and she does it from a joke book belonging to one of the miners. The lesson ends with the arrival of the postman on horseback. The postman reports that one of Ramirez's lookouts has been seen hanging about. Ashby is not worried. The Mexican girl Nina Michel Torrena has betrayed Ramirez. He will be at the Palmetto at midnight, and Ashby plans to capture him there. Nick reports that there is a stranger outside the bar asking for whiskey and water. To Minnie's way of thinking, this is a ridiculous request. Everyone at the polka drinks his whiskey neat. Rance declares his love to Minnie and offers Minnie $1,000 to kiss him. What about your wife? Minnie asks. Rance offers to leave her, but Minnie is not interested. She describes the love her mother and father had for each other and says she will settle for no less. Minnie's declaration is followed by the appearance at the door of Dick Johnson. Johnson and Minnie have met before on the road to Monterey, where they promised never to forget each other. Rance's jealousy flares up, and he asks Johnson what business he has in camp. Minnie vouches for Johnson, and they waltz, watched by the miners. This tender scene is interrupted by the arrival of Jose Castro, who has been captured by Ashby. The miners want to hang Castro because he works for Ramirez, but Castro claims to hate his boss and offers to lead the miners to him. This is all an elaborate ruse. Ramirez is none other than Dick Johnson, and Castro is delighted to see that no one recognizes his employer. Castro leads the miners off on a wild goose chase, leaving Minnie behind with Johnson. The bandit is at the polka to rob it. When he expresses surprise that Minnie keeps so much money in the polka, she explains that not all of it is hers. She also guards money for the miners. They work so hard for what they have that she is willing to guard it with her life. Johnson forgets his plan to rob the polka. He realizes he has fallen in love with Minnie, and when she invites him to her cabin, he promises to come. The act ends with Johnson consoling Minnie, who is sad at how little she has accomplished. "I'm only a poor girl," she explains. "I don't have $30 education." The Phonica is described as tubular bells behind the scene struck electrically with sponge-headed sticks. For the premiere, the Phonica was constructed by Romeo Orsi. Unfortunately, it did not produce the intended shimmering effect, and today it's usually replaced with a vibraphone.